Glenn Beck.
I will kill you. Don't think I can't. Those are the words that Harvey Weinstein reportedly said to Salma Hayek. I will kill you, and don't think I can't. The actress is the latest and one of the most high-profile women to share her frightening experience with Harvey Weinstein. In a shocking essay published by the New York Times, Hayek detailed her hellish encounters with the disgraced producer. She met Weinstein when she approached his company Miramax to help her finance and distribute her film Frida. He agreed, but his involvement came with a hefty price: her mental and physical well-being. She claims that Weinstein repeatedly stalked her and asked her for sexual favors. When she declined his advances in private, he made a demand for a sex scene in the film with her co-star, Ashley Judd, who had also been harassed by Weinstein. An emotionally battered Hayek begrudgingly agreed because the future of the film was at stake. Frida went on to win 2 Academy Awards, but Hayek clearly lost when she partnered with Weinstein. After reading her essay, it is clear he made the most important experience of her career a living hell. Salma Hayek will not be the last person to add to the mountain of allegations against Weinstein, but her account is noteworthy because it draws the line between Weinstein and the other men accused of sexual misconduct. This isn't sexual misconduct. This is rape. These are death threats. It is clear that Harvey Weinstein is in a league of his own.
It's Thursday, December 14th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The House and the Senate Republicans have reached a deal on the final tax bill. Here's what we know. The highest earning Americans are going to get a lower tax rate. Corporations are going to pay slightly more than in previous plans under the deal the House and the Senate Republicans reached. Full details of what is likely to be a $1.4 trillion tax cut over a decade will be released this week if the House and the Senate both pass the measure. The vote could come as early as next week. Donald Trump could sign it into law before Christmas, and it would go into effect in 2018. Here's what we have. The agreement would set the top individual tax rate at 37%. That's lower than the 39.6% and lower than the top rate in each of the bills that passed the House and the Senate.
Yeah, they keep saying that, but I mean, I had heard the top rate was 35% in all of these bills. There was a kind of a cutout for it was like one of those donut sort of hole taxes where there was a higher rate on very high earners, and they talked about that, but it would only apply to a certain amount of money.
Well, listen to the whole thing, because there's some things in here that may be what you're talking about. Republicans say they were considering that change to address concerns from high-earning residents in high-tax states like California and New York, who would take a hit because they would lose the ability to fully deduct state and local taxes as part of the overhaul. Rather than fully repeal the deduction as planned, the compromise would cap it at $10,000. So if you live in California, you can write off $10,000 of your state tax. The corporate rate would be 21%, which is higher than the 20% Republicans included in the House and Senate tax bills. The Senate had delayed the rate cut from today's 35% until 2019. This is going to take effect in 2018. Mr. Trump, who said he wanted a 15% corporate rate, then drew the red line at 20. And then he said, okay, well, we could go as high as 22. So they compromised at 21%. The agreement is also expected to eliminate the corporate alternative minimum tax. Keeping that as the Senate bill did, it would have undercut the value of many popular business tax breaks, including the research and development tax credit, which had been insane. Bill would retain the individual alternative minimum tax with exemptions for incomes up to $500,000 for individuals and $1 million for married couples, much higher than the current law. Republicans are also considering a 20% income deduction for so-called pass-through businesses. So this means if you own an S-corp corporation or you have a partnership, you are currently paying the
corporate rate, right?
The highest rate, but this individual rate, but this will give you a 20% income deduction for you, which I think that's great.
That's about small businesses largely. Small businesses that have to pay super high taxes because they can't get to those deduction levels and those other corporate levels. They're going to pay the corporate tax level.
Yeah.
This will help them. The criticism on it is they think a lot of people who are wealthy will, instead of getting a salary, just create an S corp or an LLC and then just be able to take that money under this lower rate. And there's things built into the bill to try to prevent that. But
news for you. Really, really rich people are going to, that's what they pay attorneys for. They're going to try to keep as much money as possible.
Well, and that's not just really, really rich people. That's everybody.
Right. I was going to say, and if you don't think that you would do that, if you had high taxes and somebody, and it was worth their while to help people at the lower end of scale, escape all of the taxes, they would help you save taxes too, because there would be loopholes all over that as well. These are loopholes. People have the money for the attorneys, and so they find them. And the really rich people, like the Kennedys, they live on trusts. They're not affected by this. Who's affected by this? This is why I'm glad to see this rate for the S-corps. Full disclosure, it would affect me. Everything is coming through, my company of Mercury. That's everything goes into there. Well, I put a lot of my money into the company. A vast majority of my money into the company. I'm paying, a corporate income tax, pay myself. I would really like to be able to save some of my money. I'd like to be able to invest some of my own money and keep some of my own money. You have a right to do it, especially it's those who had nothing, had an idea, started as an entrepreneur, starting to make a go of it. And then what? You get penalized while the people who are really rich, who have institutionalized money now, they don't pay anything? It's probably true that Warren Buffett pays, less than $100,000 a year in taxes, personal income, because he's not being paid in income.
Right. That's not how he makes his money.
Right. He's getting paid from, the capital gains or whatever, mm-hmm. which is a 15% tax. He's not being paid in income, and he's not being paid in income because he's found a way around it, so he doesn't pay a 39% tax.
It's interesting, too, to see the process that happens here, and it happens every single time with these bills. If you go back to the bill that Donald Trump proposed during the campaign, it wasn't the best of the candidates, I didn't think, but it was a pretty bold plan. It cut rates quite a bit.
That was good.
It was good. It wasn't as good as some of the other plans were proposed, but it was good.
Yeah.
And then the one he proposed as a presidential candidate as president was worse. The one that came through the House was worse than that. The one that came through the Senate was worse than that. And then this one is worse than the last Senate one. So we just keep getting worse and worse and worse. Again, is it an improvement over our current situation? I believe the answer to that is yes. The corporate side will help these companies hire more people, expand, take more risks. There is a legitimate advantage there. I think there is. Look, going from 39.6 to 37 is an embarrassingly low goal for the Republicans. The fact that you can only reduce rates by 2.6% is pathetic to me. It's pathetic. I mean, Trump's, I think, initial plan was 25% for that rate. And some other rates were as low as 10 during the campaign. What do we get? 37? I mean, it's embarrassing. However, I'd rather pay 37 than 39.6. I'd rather rich people pay 37 than 39.6. I'd rather have that happen because it's their money. We see the same construct built all the time by the left, which is, look, if you are getting a tax cut to millionaires and billionaires, that means there's less money for others. There's less money for, why are we cutting taxes for rich people? Because there's this pie and we're taking a piece of pie from poor people and we're giving it to rich people. It's the way it's always constructed, which has always been ridiculous. It's their money and you're just taking a little bit less of it. But why doesn't the same logic apply to when you're at a company and you get a raise? I assume no liberal has ever received a raise in our economy. Because why would you take more money? Instead, that money could go to someone at your company that makes less. Why would you ever accept a raise if you're a liberal? Because if you're making more than someone else, that's wrong. There's only a little bit of pie, and you're taking some of that pie from someone who could have had it. Some hourly worker could have had a little bit of a raise, and it would have meant much more to them. Why are you even accepting raises if you're a liberal? Because, of course, this is just a nonsensical political argument. Nobody believes this stuff. And, you know, the idea that people who earn money should be able to keep that money because they earned it is a fundamental principle of the United States of America. It's why we've kicked everybody's ass for the last couple hundred years. And, you know, the fact that we can't go on and keep that principle standard and understood, not acting like we're burdening other people when people who make a decent amount of money get to keep a little bit more of it. Everybody should get a tax cut. And this plan does cut taxes for everyone. You know, but it's bigger than this plan. It's a larger fundamental principle that we've lost sight of.
May I be a little black rain cloud? Everything you said was true. Everything you said was true.
Uh-oh.
And correct. Except I take exception to one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where you started, that, you know, these companies are going to take and invest this money and grow their company. And
yeah. I saw you furrow your brow a little
yes,
bit when I said that.
Because I have a different theory. May I share it?
No, you can't share it.
How?
And is that an option for me? Can I just say no?
You could, but okay. I'm going to do it anyway. We've all heard about a market meltdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of a market melt-up?
I don't think so. Sounds okay. Delicious, though.
It does. A market melt-up is the way markets serious bubbles burst. They don't grow like it has over the last 8 years. They grow and grow and grow for about 8-9 years. And then something happens when things unplug from reality. What happens is people start to pull their money out of the system. Okay. And you've heard this. I know you've read stories. Real money is starting to put, money on the taking cash and putting it on the sidelines. Have cash. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said that, pull some cash out here and have cash. However, if you look at history, what happens right before a devastating crash of 1929, the tulip crash, all of it. Okay. What happens is usually there is a buildup for, you know, just under 10 years and it gets crazy and people are saying it could never go higher. Then people start to have a run. Now, think of this with Bitcoin. What's happened with Bitcoin? Bitcoin had some great growth between, you know, $30 and $1,000, and it had some great growth. And then some people were like, you know, I should get into Bitcoin. Then it went from $1,000 to $10,000, and more people are like, you know, I should get into Bitcoin. It got up to $17,000 and $18,000, and everybody was like, okay, this is crazy. I'm going to mortgage my house. Okay. Money starts pouring into it. When it comes to a stock market, what happens is things will go 22, 25. You're going to see a point to where we're going to have a melt up and the stock market will do, not as dramatically, but the stock market will do what has happened with Bitcoin. It's going to go from 25 to 45 and it's going to be a wild ride because what's going to happen, and it's already starting, the central banks have so much money they've pulled off the side, big institutions, and now with a tax break, I believe people will see it and they'll start throwing money. The central banks are going to start investing in the stock market and they're going to try to get their money. So they're going to invest in the stock market. All that money, those billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars, going to start flowing into the stock market, which is going to make that go up. Everybody who has saved money or has money on the sidelines is going to see that, and they're going to say, I got to get in. By the time this really starts to take off, the average person is going to say, I'm going to mortgage my house because it's never going to end. And that's when it shuts off and destroys everything. I think in the next 2 years, you're going to see a stock market melt up and then a crash. Could be wrong. I hope I am.
Glenn Beck.
Who besides a Bond villain steals a submarine? An Argentinian submarine has been lost, missing, since November 15th. Apparently, some information has come out now that they had chased the submarine, and then it went dark again, and they can't find it. I mean, is there a real-life Bond villain that is stealing submarines? And that's frightening. Who steals one?
I think it'd be either a Bond villain or Bond. Well, there's literally only two.
It could be Bond.
It could
You're
be.
Right. Okay, don't panic.
It could be Bond.
It could be Bond.
He's a good guy, yeah. I think. Yeah, no, that's a very strange story. I haven't lost a submarine in a while, so I can't relate
exactly. The last time I heard was in that documentary film, Hunt for Red October.
That's right. There was there was a little bit there was that one. Do you remember when you'd be able to look, when you'd be on a flight, like on American Airlines, and you'd reach to the back of the pouch because you were bored out of your mind and they wouldn't let you use any electronics? Yeah. And you pull out SkyMall magazine.
Yes.
And you'd flip through SkyMall magazine. And there's always something awesome in SkyMall magazine.
Yeah, but you never bought anything because it was in SkyMall magazine.
Right? It didn't feel like you should buy it.
Yeah, right.
But they always had
cool
the
things.
Personal submarine in there. That was always a big
they
one.
Did.
Yeah,
they did.
It was like $4,000 for a personal submarine, which strikes me as like $4,000 is not enough to spend to keep you underwater.
Alive. Yeah.
Right?
Keeping you underwater could probably be done cheaper.
Yeah.
But keeping you underwater alive? Yeah, that one's going to, it probably should be more than $4,000.
Yeah, if I'm buying a submarine, I kind of want to, it's one of those things I want to spend more on. You know, it might, even if it only costs $2,000 for them to make, I want to spend $30 on it.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like.
You know what? This is a deal you can rip me off a little bit on. You
right.
Know? It's like Gulfstreams, you know, or any airplane. Why are they so expensive? I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It stays at this one. Has this one been crashing a lot?
Right.
No. Good. Priced right.
If you go to a tag sale and they have $30,000 Gulfstream, it's probably not one you want to buy.
No, it's
probably going
It's like if you ever get the hovercraft or the flying cars, you know, if we can ever get to the point to where we have flying cars like Uber says they're going to have flying taxis. I want you to spend a lot of money on that, Uber. I want you to spend a lot on that flying car.
Well, it's one of those, because this, I will say another example of this phenomenon is surgery. Like, there is a lot of places that offer surgery. Like, there's a lot of LASIK places that do this. They'll be like, hey, surgery on your eye, $29 an eye. Like,
First of all, it should be a package deal.
Right? Give me
get both of the eyes. I mean, give me a price for both eyes. I'm going to be crazy. I'm going to have both of them done.
And like I certainly no insult to any company that does this, but it makes me think every time of like, I don't know if I want a super deep discount on my eye surgery. Like, take your time. You know what? Let's block out a couple of appointments. You know what? Like, do you take your time and I'll pay for 12 eyes.
You know what?
But just do the two.
You should be on the golf course more. You really should.
You should.
Let me help you get there. Just don't screw up my eyes.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Intersectional feminist Laura Witt. Now, I'm going to pretend that I don't know what an intersectional feminist is.
It's a feminist who stands and makes their stances inside of an intersection. They stand in the middle.
Okay.
A four-way road.
Huh. Pat. Explain explain what an
intersectional.
No, an intersectional feminist.
Intersectional feminist is a feminist who has entered the sexual realm of feminism. I have no idea. Intersex, isn't that a person with both parts?
No, this is intersectional. Not intersexual. Intersectional.
Feminist. Okay, feminist. So that's a person who lives in the West, but they're... Other feminist people that they talk to are in the East.
Okay.
And that,
all right. Good.
Intersectional.
Stu, help us out. Did
intersectional
you Google it?
Yes. There's a USA Today story all about it, which
of course.
Which gives you
which everybody
the title.
Stepped over as what they went out of their hotel
right.
room.
What is intersectional feminism? A look at the term you may be hearing a lot.
Okay. All right.
It says intersectional feminism is much more than the latest feminist buzzword. It's a decades-old term many feminists use to explain how the feminist movement can be more diverse and inclusive.
It's a decades-old term that we've all heard for the first time in the last week.
Apparently.
The last minute. Okay.
Jeez.
Okay, so she has come out now as somebody who wants to make sure that women, you know, are strong women that aren't going to, you know, date somebody who is an oppressor.
Yeah, and this, I think, explains this article as well. If feminism is advocating for women's rights and equality between the sexes, intersectional feminism is the understanding of how women's overlapping identities, including race, class, ethnicity, religion, and sexual orientation, impact the way they experience oppression and discrimination. So it's basically like feminism with social justice.
Okay, so here it is. She says, you should not be dating somebody who is not like you, okay? She says, quote, as a queer femme of color, I keep low...
I'm sorry, are you saying that or is the article saying
says.
That?
Okay. Yeah, okay. Oh, I could identify what it...
No, I'm asking, that's what I was asking.
Right. As a queer femme of color, I keep close relationships with people who go beyond allyship. They're true accomplices in the fight against white supremacy, queer phobia, and misogyny. And if you're not going to support the marginalized folks, then we can't be friends, let alone date.
Hmm.
The personal is political. So she says, there are questions that you need to ask before you get close to someone. Skip all the pesky small talk. She says, you need to ask these questions before you go out on a date.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Pat, you're going to go ahead, ask me out on a date.
Glenn, would you like to go out with me?
No.
Okay.
Stu.
You just rejected him?
Yeah. Asked
why? Why did you reject him? Is it because he's
look
a man?
Him. Look at him. Think I want to...
Oh, is it,
when did I say I wanted to date a 50-year-old man? Never.
Plus, I'm not intersectional, so...
Okay. Right. So anyway. Okay, so here's the list. Do you believe... Number one, do you believe that Black lives matter?
Yes, I believe all lives matter.
What are your thoughts on gender and sexual orientation? How do you want to work to dismantle sexism and misogyny in your life?
I don't. I'm too lazy for what that.
You said the word work, so no.
What are your thoughts on sex work? Well, I'm first of all, it shouldn't be work.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm willing to put in an 8-hour day with you. I'm just
honestly, if you're on a date and someone asks you, how do you feel about sex work? I would think that they're saying, I'm a prostitute. Are you going to pay me for tonight?
Yes. That's how I'd read that.
Right. What are your thoughts on sex work? Are you a supporter of the BDS movement?
If I knew what the BDS movement was.
Irritated bowel syndrome. It's an ailment that affects thousands.
No, it's not. No, this is the tie you up and gag you and put a little red
no,
ball.
No, you're thinking.
No, that's not.
No, you're thinking of BDSM.
Oh. Oh, okay. So I don't. BDS movement, isn't that the deal about
the boycott Israel?
Yeah,
thing.
Boycott Israel.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah,
I'm not with that.
What is your understanding of settler colonialism and indigenous rights? Can you imagine somebody asks you out for a date?
I know,
and you say, "Hang on, just a second. I just want to know your understanding of settler colonialism and indigenous rights." I immediately say. You know what? I might even agree with you on those, but I'm no longer interested.
My invitation to dinner.
Wow, is it going to be a lot of work?
By the way, I'm fascinated by the sex work question here.
Yeah.
That we've had over the past week two hardcore left wing sort of advocates tell us to ask questions of people that we come in contact with. One, if we're on a date, how do you feel about sex work? And then when you're at work, if you want to hug someone, you should first ask, may I use your body?
Mm-hmm.
What is happening here? Mm. These are not advisable questions to ask anyone.
Doesn't seem like a positive trend.
No.
Number seven, do you think capitalism is exploitive? Can any human be illegal?
Yes.
Do you support Muslim Americans and non-Muslim people from Islamic countries?
Yes.
Do we support Muslim people? Do you support Muslim Americans and non-Muslim people from Islamic countries?
Sure.
Yeah, sure, like, of course.
Yeah, of course.
I support everybody that doesn't try to kill us.
Number 10. Does your allyship include disabled folks?
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
My answer to that is, I'm sorry. I just remembered. I don't date people who use the word allyship.
Yes. Where does that... Allyship.
It's, you know...
Your circle of friends?
I'm for gay rights. And so I'm an oppressed people. So I need to look for the other marginalized people. And I'm an ally with all marginalized people.
But you can't be an ally with a white person who's a Christian and has traditional standards.
No, they're not marginalized.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, not at all.
Right.
Not at all.
You can't be inclusive of them.
No.
They must be silenced.
No, I know.
When you type in the word allyship into Google, the first thing you get is the definition from the Feminist Humanist Alliance. Which is...
The Feminist Humanist Alliance.
It's weird because...
You don't believe in God, right? Basically.
I don't know. I'm a member of the Intersectional Feminist Humanist Alliance.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you think the Feminist Humanist Alliance is not socially justice related enough?
Haters. Okay. Their allyship doesn't include
everything. I know they don't go
everything.
Far enough. Yeah. They just don't.
No, they don't.
You guys been following the Blake Farenthold representative from Texas?
Yeah, he's got to step down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, he's one of the congressmen who used taxpayer money to pay off an accuser. $84,000. So it must have been somewhat serious. He is also accused of referring.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was the price of keeping it quiet.
Keeping it quiet, yes.
And you know that if you are accused of any kind of sexual impropriety, especially in Texas, you are not going to win an election. So all we know from that, he may be a dirtbag. But all we know from that is it was worth someone, his job, his credibility was worth $80,000.
So settlement doesn't equal guilt is what you're trying to get across. That's true. It's certainly true. There were some pretty in-depth reporting.
But taxpayer money has to be treated differently.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree too.
I agree.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think if you're in public office.
There should be no taxpayer
money. You should not be paying.
Not a penny.
No.
Nope.
Not a penny to settle a claim. And instead they've done... How much were we told? $3 million?
Yeah, millions.
Now, here's the problem with that. If you don't give them some sort of protection, how's the average person, like average people, let me just answer this question. I was going to say, how can the average person afford to do that? Well, the average person goes to Congress and then uses all the loopholes to do insider trading, becomes a multimillionaire, and they pay their own settlement.
Right.
That's how it happens.
That's why everybody in D.C. is rich.
That's right.
But his communications director, Michael Rucola, says that every time he didn't like something, he would call me an F-tard or an idiot.
I heard that.
He would slam his fist down in rage and explode in anger. He was flying off the handle on every little thing. And everybody in the office said the same thing. So Farenthold's response to this was that, I always call people F-tards, but it wasn't in anger. It was for fun. That is your excuse?
That's a great answer.
I admit to the frequent use of the word F-tard, but, I mean F-tard with love.
Is that shortened or is it?
He said the actual.
Yeah, okay. So yes. He said the whole thing.
Yes, now, the F word plus tard.
There was a lengthy description. Wow. And again, these are all accusations and, innocent until proven guilty at all of that.
Although he admitted the F-tards thing.
And he admitted several other parts of it. I guess they had a beer fridge that, like, around 4:30, the staff would just start cracking open beers and it became like happy hour all the time.
Like every day Fridays?
That was the description of the article. That was kind of common. But the other
Not
thing they said.
Not enough alcohol in the world to keep me in Washington.
No kidding. They said some aides, when they would go out after work, would have to be put on redhead duty because apparently he had a thing for redheads. And so, like, whenever there was a redhead would come by, the aides would have to basically shield the redheads from him.
Oh, my gosh.
And so when he was asked about this, his answer was, yeah, a lot of people joked that I find redheads attractive, but it wasn't, there was no real redhead problem. Like, he acknowledged that this was a thing, the redhead duty was a thing, it wasn't really.
Strange, all these guys are dirtbags enough to do this, but they're not dirtbags enough to deny it? Because a lot of these guys are just saying, yeah, that's me. I need to look inside myself.
So it's going to happen. We're just going to start to accept all this stuff. It is. It's just going to start.
We're going to accept the sexual harassment stuff?
Yeah, we're just going to start accepting, because it's going to be everywhere, everything. It's going to go so far over the cliff. It's just going to eventually, you're not, and then false accusers are going to come out, and it's going to be mixed up and jumbled up, and you're just not going to know what's true anymore. And so people will be like, yep, I did that. That's just me. And as long as it's not Harvey Weinstein stuff, you're just going to move on from it in the future. Not now, but in the future, I think.
How far off do you think that is? Because right now it's
a year.
I don't think we're at the end of this.
No, yet. We're not. Did you see what Morgan Spurlock did?
Yes.
Spurlock said...
He's the supersize me guy.
Yeah. I don't know if he used that as a line, but he may have. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm part of the problem, and he admits to sexual misconduct. Now, there was nobody accusing him of anything.
At least that we know of.
Yeah, that we know of. There's nothing. He said... he wasn't asking who will be next to be accused of sexual misconduct. He said, when will they come for me? I'm sure I'm not alone in this thought, but I can't blindly act as though I didn't somehow play a part in this. And if I'm going to truly represent myself as someone who's built a career on finding the truth, and it's time to me to be truthful as well, I am part of the problem. He recalled an incident in college where he had one night stand with a classmate. The classmate wrote about it in a short story, accusing him of rape. He noted that there were never any charges or investigation. That's not what happened, I told her. It's not how I remembered it at all in my mind. We'd been drinking and went back to my room. We fooled around. She pushed me off. We laid there and we talked. We laughed some more, began fooling around again. We took off our clothes. She said she didn't want to have sex. We laid together. We talked. We kissed. We laughed. And then we started having sex.
You have to keep going with this part of the story, because this is very strange to me.
Light bright, she said. What? Light bright, that kid's toy. That's all I can see and think about, she said. And then she started to cry. I didn't know what...
There may be a deeper issue here going on.
Wow.
Like, if that's still told the way it happened, that screams that she had some terrible incident in her past.
She said, I could see and think about. Then she started to cry. I didn't know what to do. We stopped having sex, and I rolled beside her. I tried to comfort her to make her feel better. I thought she was doing okay. I thought she was feeling better. She believed she was raped. That's why I'm part of the problem.
But again, you know, it's his telling, right? But it's an incident where she's willingly playing around with him, right? Mm-hmm. It goes to a point where she feels uncomfortable, so they stop.
And we've talked about this several times on Patents too, that the definition now of rape is completely different than it once was. You know, it's like you're forcing yourself on somebody, but now it's, are the two of you drunk? Is she drunk?
Mm-hmm.
Then that's rape.
Even if both of you are drunk, only the male is the rapist,
right,
and the female is the rapee.
Yes.
It's just and this has happened and played out in colleges like crazy, to the point where in colleges, it's really kind of turned around. Mm-hmm. And now the system that had been built by almost exclusively left-wing administrations has turned around, and more due process is coming, I think, a little bit on that side. But it's the opposite in the rest of the world.
The problem really is that his allyship doesn't include illegals that think capitalism is exploitive.
Fair.
So
that's true.
Yeah.
If she would have found that out at the beginning of the date, there's no bedroom time.
And no bedroom time at all. Yeah. And that's what it should have been. So see how that works out.
Pat Gray Unleashed, coming up on the Blaze Radio and TV Network, where he'll describe his allyship in detail today, hopefully, on the program.
I don't think he has any allies.
No. No?
If you've been thinking, I mean, besides us.
Glenn Beck.
Give me 10 minutes tonight. I'm going to show you why 2018 is going to be the world we'll never forget. Tonight, 5 o'clock, only on The Blaze TV, theblaze.com/TV. See you then.
Glenn.